This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry and technology. This is David Wilk, your host, and today I'm talking to Liam Sharp and Ben Abernathy of Madefire, M-A-D-E-F-I-R-E, which is a startup, more or less, in what we would loosely call motion books. Illustrated books brought to life through technology. Liam is the one of the founders and chief creative officer, and Ben is the editor-in-chief. How are you guys?
We're good, thanks, David. It was good to talk to you in at the New York Con.
No, that was fun. For me, you guys were the highlight, one of the highlights of my show. I found New York Comic Con was just overwhelming this year, and it was hard to focus.
Absolutely. It's great to be on. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, no, this is great. It was really, I'd read about you before I met you, but it hadn't really sunk in what you were doing until I got a chance to sit down and look at the work you're doing. And maybe you could just talk a little bit about Madefire, how it started, and what is your what's your goal with what you're creating?
Well, gosh, let's start. We're essentially, most of us are all from comic book backgrounds, but we have kind of, I guess, broader tastes than that. It was, some of it was to do with issues that were being recognized in print in the mid-2000s, and some of it was just the very clear innovations that were happening and the steps that were being taken sort of with comics digitally. And it just seemed like there was very much an opportunity there, but that it was also a pioneering area. And I met one of the other co-founders, Ben Wolstenholme, in London. He's an old friend of mine, and we were pondering some of these questions. And he's from a company called Moving Brands, that are a leading branding specialist in San Francisco and London. And they basically are major innovators, and he's from a storytelling background and a great artist himself. And we really were just, as I say, pondering these questions and thinking, well, how do we move forward with the sliding away of print sales, particularly in comics at that time, and the growth of this new sort of digital medium. And we just really got very excited about it and started imagining what was possible in that landscape, and, you know, with embedded links. And I sort of came up with what I was terming kind of story clouds, and imagining how stories needn't necessarily be linear, and how they could strap themselves to perhaps news feeds or any other number of things that are available digitally that aren't available on paper. And that was really key to it, you know. How do we respect the platform and treat it as if it's not paper? You know, it's smarter than a piece of paper, so where do you go after that? That was the kind of background philosophy, and we threw that around, and Ben moved out here to lead his, out to California to lead the San Francisco Moving Brands, and he was fortunate enough to meet Tony Schneider from True Ventures, and he was explaining some of our thinking, and Tony got very excited about it. Tony's also leads WordPress. He's very important there. And so he's kind of done that with words and the internet, and he kind of imagined as kind of an image press, I guess. So he got very excited about it and said, well, you need a tech founder. And he introduced us to Eugene Walden, who built the tool and the platform and has led all the tech department to creating the platform and the reader. And I thought, well, I need an editor. And who's the best editor I've ever worked with in my 27 years as a comic strip artist? And it was really a no-brainer. I had to at least offer the position to Ben Abernathy, and I'm very grateful that he took that position and came and joined us.
Well, I appreciate the offer, and just a quick sort of like my two cents on that side, David. I was the group editor for DC Digital, DC Comics, their digital division, and I still remember the first time the Madefire guys came in and demoed their tool and Mono and Capstone for us at the DC office in Burbank, and we were all just blown away because it was clear that, you know, where digital, you know, the digital delivery system for comics, you know, was at that point and where it was going. It was clear that Madefire was where it was going, in my opinion, and I was very fortunate to actually join the group up here. So.
Well, so, it, you know, I think one of the things that, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, that before we started doing the interview, that it's so difficult to convey in words what it is you're doing when you're building something new that people haven't seen before. And, you know, I think in many cases it comes down to having to demonstrate it to people. But do you find in, you know, and I've seen this in the book side, where there's a kind of automatic questioning of the value or utility or meaningfulness of the approach to reimagining what was in print in a digital form. You know, that there's sort of a kind of a print mentality that questions whether the digital can do anything so special, so much better than print, that it's meaningful. And how do you face that kind of challenge from people sometimes? And if so, how do you describe to them what it is you're doing and show them kind of, I mean, maybe you have to show them and actually show them the stories on an iPad, but how do you kind of get across what you're trying to do?
Well, I'll take the first pass at this one, and then Liam will correct me and sound very debonair in his response. But and I can boil it down much more from my own perspective, coming from the heavy print world. You know, Liam's obviously one of the co-founders and the geniuses, so he'll have, like I said, a much more articulate answer. But in a lot of ways, when I've explained to print comic book creators and you know, third party publishers and stuff who make, you know, they're living at print. The first question is, well, you know, so it's digital comics, like what you would read on the Kindle Fire or on the Comixology app or you know, graphically, et cetera. And I'm like, well, no, you know, we utilize, you know, limited motion and sound to create a much more sort of, you know, augmented reading experience, to which then the question is like, so it's like a motion comic, which it's like, well, no, it's not a motion comic, which tend to be more passive animation, you know, attempts at animation or, you know, really taking the reading experience out of your hands and you're sitting there and watching something on your iPad. We're kind of, you know, our own sort of medium that we've created where it's the DNA of comic books and graphic storytelling, but it's really taking it, like Liam said earlier, to, you know, to the next level, to what a tablet device can do. So we're not trying to recreate a paper reading experience, which we're trying to maximize the, you know, the qualities of the smart devices and create, you know, like I said, the sort of the next generation, the next level, the future of storytelling. And then they ask another question, and I just actually pull out my phone and show it to them, because it's hard to convey it in words, because, you know, it's such an amazing experience that you do need to experience it.
It's exactly right what you say, David. It's very hard to say words why you should look at it, but inevitably, I mean, pretty much without exception, I can't think of the exception where somebody's come over to the stands that we've had, whether it's a San Diego or New York, and we've shown them, actually sort of shown them it, and they haven't gone, wow. You know, there's moments in there, particularly like the 360 panorama sequences that nobody expects and they haven't seen before. And it's not just a gimmick. It really does throw you into the story. You know, it's immersive and it makes sense as a storytelling device. And I think the one thing that a lot of people make a mistake about, particularly from the print world, is that you shouldn't, to paraphrase Douglas Adams, you shouldn't mistake the plate for the food. Great stories can be told in absolutely any medium, and this is literally a new medium. And what's wonderful about it is that we're in a pioneering situation here. We're really finding out what the limits are. We don't know yet. It can grow and it can expand. You know, and if you imagine as well that especially the comic industry and purveyors of science fiction and fantasy and all things fantastic these are the most visionary writers and artists on the planet. So why would they not want to delve into this magical technological world? You know, it just seems to be cutting off your nose to spite your face. I mean, I just think it's so fascinating where this is going.
I agree. I think what you just said is very important, and that is that it's not a gimmick. As long as it's as long as the tools are being used to advance storytelling and engage people in the imaginative world of the creator in a way that you couldn't have done it any other way or couldn't have seen it happen before, then it seems to me that it's authentic, and then you're giving people new tools. You could compare it to television going from black and white to color.
Yes, entirely. I had a really interesting meal when I was in New York a couple of weeks ago for the con, with my agent, my literary agent, because I've got a second novel coming out, which I'm very excited about. So, if anyone ever doubts that I'm a fan of words and paper, they're grievously mistaken. But I was talking to him, and he came up with this very clear, pertinent point that I'd never really thought of myself, and it had only just struck him. And what it was that he had only just realized that there's a difference between people who love reading and stories and people who have a kind of fetishistic association, connection with the printed matter, the delivery system, which is a book. And that's really fascinating, because his view, after thinking about it for a while, was actually things like Kindle that deliver just the words and otherwise are entirely ephemeral are actually truer to the writer's vision than a book might be, which, where the design and the paper and all the other associations, the smell or whatever, the age, the feel, the weight, they're all very personal things that the person puts upon it. Ceases to become just about the story itself.
I hadn't thought of that in just that way before, but in a certain way, it's true that the devices that we experience story are all the figment of technology, all of them.
Yes,
and in some ways, what you're saying is that this technology may in fact create a closer relationship between the creator and the consumer, the reader.
I think so. I mean, what's happening, without a shadow of a doubt, I think our generation is attached to the physical in a way that children and young people and teenagers aren't. I think there's this sense from people probably 30 upwards that they have to own something. They have to actually have a physical object that they can call their own. Whereas I know from my kids, they look at the internet, they feel like they own the internet. They all share and own a bit of the internet, and they don't have the same attachment to the objects. It doesn't matter to them. As soon as they log on to whatever page, they own their own Facebook page, they own their own ephemeral, non-existent piece of this, electronic void, in the same way that we stick an object on a shelf. They really don't see the difference. And I think that is a message that's important, that we might not get it, but the next generation will.
Yeah, I think we know this from thinking about the difference between digital and physical and watching, and as I think you're right, it is generational, the idea of ownership of a physical good as a kind of leftover from the commodity era, and we're now in a digital era, which creates different relationships between the consumer and the object, whatever, the object is no longer a physical good.
It seems like the most coveted objects at the moment are the ones that put you into these virtual spaces most successfully.
Yeah, like an iPad.
Right.
and so, yeah, those become the fetish objects, and that is the iPhone, the iPad, the Surface or the Samsung device, because those are the tools that deliver you these experiences, as well as delivering you the social connections that you would have, you know, that you couldn't get any other way. The phone is the device that connects kids. If you're talking about kids, you know, 8, 10, 11 year olds, the phone is the critical device for them.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about Madefire again in terms of the reader experience, because we talked a little bit before about how creators are they're kind of finding this out as a new tool that's really giving them new opportunities to tell stories in a different way. What kind of reaction do you get from the readers, and who are the consumers for Madefire? What ages are they? What kinds of people are they that are coming to your app and discovering the work that you're presenting?
Well, I guess, you know, I guess the reader reaction can probably be, at least on the iOS experience, can be summed up pretty easily in that we've maintained a 5-star app rating on our iPad app since, you know, June of 2012, and the iPhone since October 2012. And I believe that we're still the highest rated book app actually in the App Store, which speaks to the quality of the product. People speak with gold stars when it comes along those lines, and maintaining a 5-star rating is impressive. And we've gotten a lot of comments from people's shows and, you know, direct sort of interactions through the website or whatever, or even on, you know, the DeviantArt message boards and, you know, the Deviants themselves, that people love what we do and they love the experience. They love titles more than others because of their own personal tastes, as anyone would. But it Liam and Ben Wilson encourage us if there's a bad day, or if things just, you know, if we're overwhelmed with work, to take some time to read the reviews on the App Store, especially because they're positive, but a lot of them are very insightful as to why they like it or why they think it's a 5-star rated app, not just like, that's awesome. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of that stuff, which is cool. People take the time to sort of articulate why they like it and what they really enjoy about it.
Do you get readers and fans making suggestions to you about what they'd like to see in terms of tools and changes in the environment? Has that happened at all?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, DeviantArt is a great way to connect directly with a creative community who they're fans as well as creators, and they don't hold anything back on what they tell us what we should do. In New York Comic Con, I would demo a book for 2 minutes, and I would get them starting to explain, you guys should do multi-choice stuff. You guys should do an entire story of panoramas. You guys should do all, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's cool to see that instant spark of creativity. Like, oh my God, here's what you guys should do. You guys can do this. You should do that. And it's exciting and tiring at times too.
So
we thought about all that stuff.
And so there's so many questions I want to ask you, but one of them is, do you make the tool available to publishers? I know they can, in other words, or I guess creators as well. People can make their own books using your tool, correct?
Right, right. I mean, right now, the plan is to release the tool to the public probably within, you know, the next 6 months or so. Can't, you know, commit to any specific date because we're still in a beta stage at this point. But the publishers do have access to the motion book tool. Everything we do that you see in our store and our Madefire studio titles are all created entirely in tool. There's no sort of smoke and mirrors. And there's several hundred creators, you know, from Deviants and the DeviantArt community, as well as creators in the comic book community, you know, creative studios, movie people, et cetera, that are in tool and sort of experimenting, playing around.
We're basically opening it up in stages, and in the next month there'll be a much clearer announcement about specific timing around that. But that's going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks to a month. And it's going to be in stages, and people will be it'll be fully open to the public definitely within, I think, 4 or 5 months.
So when you go open to the public, and let's say I'm just a person and I have an idea for a story,
yep,
and I'm not an artist, are you going to have a community of artists that I, you know, I might be able to approach and say, here's my story. I've got this really cool idea. You know, I'm looking for artists to collaborate with. I mean, how are you going to build this thing?
Well, that already exists because we're partnered with DeviantArt. So that community already works in that sense. So writers and artists often find each other on those pages and those forums that already exist in that space. And there's 28 million users on DeviantArt, and they're all creatives, and many are writers, and many are artists, and they're all different levels. Some are amateur, and some are highly professional. What's wonderful about it is this space is going to literally, I think, revolutionize the storytelling process, because what you get in the single space of this creative environment is the publisher, the fan level artist, this professional level artist, people who are up and coming, the critics, people who can feedback, literally the entire ecosystem of a publishing community is in one space.
Well, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was going to say one other thing too, and this, we've seen this on DeviantArt like immediately when we announced back in April, is that there were a lot of people that were like, well, I'm a prose writer and, you know, I don't know any comic book artists or anything along these ways. Could I build a prose reading experience that is, you know, more than just a page turn like you might get on like another sort of, you know, reading platform? Or we had people asking if they could build magazines, like do an interactive magazine delivery, and, you know, because initially, well, in my experience when I first came on, a lot of the conversations centered around like basically digital comic books, like graphic novel inspired content. When we opened to DeviantArt, there was a lot of that, but then there was a lot of all these other ideas of how. We had one guy that was like, I can't wait to build my company's presentations and motion tool and play it.
Yeah.
I mean, wherever it'll go, you know, is going to be amazing. And the tool is functional enough to really satisfy all those needs.
I think people will do newsletters or fan magazines or, right, you know, there's any number of possibilities that could do with this. And there's also the possibility to do animatics for films and presentations like that too.
Right.
It's a really, really versatile tool. And you have, once you get in there, because it's in the web, it's basically it's in the cloud. So once you've got your login, all your accounts are tied together. So you have an option to print, to publish to DeviantArt, to publish to your iPad, and that hits a preview section. So anything you create will be loaded and available for you to review your own work, literally within a couple of minutes. At which point you can go through it all and see whether the tap points are working, see whether your animations are playing how you want them to, and go back and change and add more and take things out and constantly review. It's extraordinarily kind of fluid and very engaging kind of process. I love being in there and playing around and seeing what's possible, trying to break it.
We keep Liam way too busy. I
think you should talk a little bit about the relationship you have with DeviantArt, because it occurred to me as you were talking about it, we never really introduced that idea, you know, of what you did with DeviantArt. And there may be people who are listening who actually, believe it or not, may not have ever been to DeviantArt.com, mm-hmm. So may not know what that's all about. So maybe you could talk a little bit about, first of all, who DeviantArt is, but also, really, how did you hook up with them, and how did this relationship occur?
Well, it's funny. When we had our first tiny studio in San Francisco on Water Market, and we had this little box of room, but it did have a great view out over the bay, we had this blank wall, which we filled on the first day with thoughts and suggestions and dreams and hopes and places we hoped that we might be able to take the company in the coming years and decades. Most of which we've achieved in under time, miraculously. But one of the first pieces of paper we put on there, well, I stuck on the wall myself because it's a community I have very much part of, was literally the word DA for DeviantArt. DeviantArt is now 13 years old, I think. 13 years old.
Yeah, they celebrated an anniversary.
It's a really pioneering site. They were the first people to have the little pictures of icons and have chat rooms. And it really is, I think it was historically, it's actually the first social network, but it's still the seventh biggest in the world, even though it's the one that nobody's heard of. Like I said, it's 28 million users, and it's a creative community of photographers, writers, people who are fans, and professionals as well. Pretty much most of the professional artists in my field and in sort of film concept art, they all have a page up on there. And it's a really extraordinary community. So I've had my main gallery on there for getting on for 8 years now, and have been... it's generally where I post my journals. I preview all my work there and have done for a long time. It's even from a professional point of view, when I wanted to showcase anything, I'd literally just point them at that gallery. That's the best place to go and see. So before we'd done anything, this seemed like an obvious place for us to at least reach out and talk to these guys. We had no means of doing this, but it was a good idea. And then it's quite funny. Oh, sorry, I'll follow up in a second.
Oh, no.
Ben's going to...
No, I was going to say, it was like kind of a funny story was, so the one time in 2011 that I actually made it over to the Madefire booth at San Diego Comic-Con, it was on a Sunday, and I finally got time away from the DC booth. I wanted to come say hello and sort of see what they were up to. And I literally get to the booth, I, you know, hug Liam and shake Ben's hands. And on appear, actually the founder of DeviantArt and his sort of closest advisors. And from there, it was, you know, very obvious, sort of a big meeting. And,
it was funny. It was one of these things that was meant to happen because they had been all over the con for the whole sort of 7 days. And they got to the last day and they were a bit tired and despondent and hadn't felt like they'd met the partner that they were hoping to meet at the show. And they were a little bit frustrated, a little bit down. And one of the artists, Artist Ali, said to Angelo, "Have you been over and checked out Madefire?" And they're like, "No, who are Madefire?" And he said, "Well, you just got to go out." In fact, he escorted them straight to us. We were only a few stalls away. So he brought them to us. Now, bearing in mind that we had been meaning to meet these guys as well. And I saw Angelo, who's the founder and CEO of DeviantArt, and I thought, I recognize that guy. Why do I know this fella? Anyway, they were pretending that they had some menial job, like stacking shelves or, you know, for DeviantArt. They were incognito completely, but they were like pretending to be, you know, downplaying themselves entirely. It was almost like wearing a disguise, which they shrugged off after probably 5-10 minutes of being on the stand and went, "Ha-ha, we are DeviantArt, we are..." It was a really fabulous moment, because it was kind of love at first sight, really, from both sides. And we immediately started talking, got on very, very well, the founders and I got us, we got him, everything about it was perfect. And we just spent the next year figuring out the best way we could integrate each other would be over the following months and years. And it's been a really exciting journey. And yes, they're just great and supportive.
No, it's terrific. It's terrific for you to have that partnership. It's a really amazing thing, and as you indicated before, it has lots of potential for you going forward.
Can I say one other thing, David?
Yeah.
As well,
that
when we signed the partnership actually in April, DeviantArt is basically our sole web reading experience, and so. You know, it's kind of, while we're scalable toward Android, you know, sort of other platforms. I don't know if that's a question on the list, but we'll just take that one on head on. While we're scalable to that, you know, it's something, you know, on the roadmap. Moving to the web was a really huge deal to sort of, you know, expand our reach, just, you know, beyond, you know, tremendous iOS experience. And so another component of a big component of the DeviantArt deal was actually getting our content on the web and reachable to like a much larger audience.
Right. Now, I think that's important too about all of, you know, we were talking before about the devices being the kind of necessary entry points for so many of these experiences. But of course, we know no matter how many millions of iPads are sold or how many millions of iPhones are sold, that still leaves millions and millions and millions of other people who don't have those devices. So I think being on the web is critical. You can't just be a limited to what the world of devices allows you to do.
No, that's right. We really did build for the iPad because we thought this was the most technologically advanced and beautiful of the delivery systems. And so we tried to make it the optimal reading experience we possibly could, given the resources that we had. And we didn't know if it would work on the web. We had really no idea. It was a bit like when we added sound. It was almost last minute. We thought, well, we should try it because that's our ethos, you know, try everything. You can. It's easy if it's too much, you can step it back, but at least try it. That's very much the root of our philosophy is, you know, it's better too much, because then you can trim it all.
Right, but, where people don't need to use, they don't need to use all of the features, but you want to have them all for those times when they really are critical.
Well, if you don't try, you don't know. It's as simple as that. You know, if you don't try to go to the moon, you don't know if you can go to the moon. It's like, and you don't know until you get there what that's going to lead to next. You know, the technology that was created in order to enable people to do that span off a whole load of other things. And it's the same with this. You know, we didn't know sound was going to work, but we figured out that if people didn't like it, they could just turn it off. It happened. It was a lot like, you know, silent movies then having sound. You know, it really did add a huge amount in terms of ambience and atmosphere and setting a tone for the books. And we found, interestingly, that you could have a soundtrack that didn't interfere with the reading experience. You didn't need to have a voiceover and a soundtrack. You could still dictate the pacing. You could still read it. You could have loop sections or whatever. It worked and wasn't intrusive. It was a real revelation. And to go back to the point, we didn't know if it was going to work as a web reading experience until we tried it, and we were delighted to find that it really did.
I remember when Dave Gibbons actually checked out in Tokyo for the first time on the web on his, like, I don't know, 40-inch computer monitor and his surround sound speakers, and he was so blown away. I think he was something to the effect of, like, he's like almost preferred reading it on the web actually to the iPad, because it was like watching, you know, or like experiencing, just the future, to the next level. It was right.
Well, and there's also a different orientation. I've thought about this a lot in terms of reading, that with desktop computers and even laptops, it's a reading forward, kind of looking up experience. You know, just as you're describing that 40-inch screen, I'm imagining you're sitting in a chair looking at a 40-inch screen. But when you're reading an iPad, it's like the traditional looking down experience of reading a book. Those are two different things, and the same book, the same thing could read differently, I would think, on the big screen than it would on the small screen of an iPad.
It's right. Interesting because I've heard a lot around that, and people say, well, you know, if you're sitting at your computer, you're not in the same sense as position that would be sort of sitting at home watching TV, which is an iPad kind of is, because it's on your lap. At least it's a relaxed sitting back experience. But at the same time, again, it's a generation thing, I think, because kids seem to be watching no end of media on their laptops and their home computers, and they're watching, you know, YouTube, and they're watching films, and they're watching whole little TV series on a little screen to the side of, you know, to the main screen while they're working. It's very much, I think those boundaries and those assumptions are constantly being challenged at the moment. It's really fascinating time.
I agree. And I think it's very exciting what you're doing. And, you know, when I think about it and when I look at Madefire, I don't know what to call them, Madefire comics or stories, it makes, you know, it kind of encourages me to think of, well, maybe here's a project I think would look really good in this. You know, maybe that's something we can do. So it does encourage you you know, when if you're involved at all in creative work, it does lead you to try to figure out how could I use that in something that I want to do that would be just as good or, you know, better than what I could do anywhere else.
So that's the fun of it. I think it's the play element, you know, and I think you forget to play in everything. It's almost, I mean, there was a point I remember early on when I got into comics for the first time, and I'd probably been drawing for about 3 years before an editor at some point started telling me that there was rules for drawing comics, page by page, and very specific rules. And I was like, hang on, I've been drawing in 3 years. I didn't know about any of these rules. And it's, oh, yeah, no, they're very fixed and firm in place. You've really got to stick with that. And there's rules for the colouring, and there's rules for the inking. There's rules for every step of it. And I just immediately, that just turned me right off. I just thought, where's the play in that? Where's the fun in that? And where's the excitement? How does this ever progress as a medium if we're going to strap ourselves to such kind of, you know, stringent rules about how you do something? And it also seems to me, again, something we've been blessed with at Madefire is that the creators that we've had that helped us begin this journey, be it Bill Sienkiewicz or Dave Gibbons, they're visionary. They've been leaders in field, you know, in different ways they've innovated, whether it's Dave with Watchmen and having lights that flash on and off from panel to panel, and or Bill completely breaking every single rule in the book with Electra Assassin. It's the breaking of those rules that shows what's possible. And I think sometimes you have to break the rules to find out whether they're in the first place, particularly with what we're doing, because if we didn't have the rule breaking, we would end up with something way too static, I think, something that was a little bit insipid and not very inspired. When we had Kinmen Chan, who didn't even come from a sequential background, well, a comics background, he came from Lucasfilm. He thought about it in ways that we really didn't predict, and it was him that busted open the whole top left to bottom right and balloon sequences coming out, in, you know, again left to right, top to bottom. He had characters and balloons and words all popping up all over the screen. It was dictated by the timing and the pace, which is the reader. And it wasn't confusing. It was a real revelation. You could have a sequence of balloons popping into a frame at quite a speed, you know, like 0.3 of a second. You could have a sequence of 9 or 10 balloons spreading up in an S shape from the bottom right corner up to the top left corner, and then settle. And you would know to read them in that order because that's the way they'd appeared. It didn't matter how fast. It was it's a revelation to us about A, how your brain works, but also how it just didn't matter anymore whether you were in that structure or not, that sequential traditional structure.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Well, I think it would be really good for my listeners to visit madefire.com and see you on the web. Also go to deviantart.com and to take a look at the Madefire app in the in the App Store on iOS devices. It's really been great talking to you. I'm hoping that we'll be able to talk again, you know, in a year or two after you've made even more progress and done even more amazing things. So I want to thank you for doing this.
Thank you very much, David. It's been delightful.
Yeah, absolutely, David. It's been a pleasure. And actually, it would be pretty cool to do one a year from now after the tool has been released and, you know, a few more things up our sleeves have come out, and it'd be interesting to, you know, to follow up.
No, I agree. And especially, I think it'll be really interesting to see how, when you release the tool essentially to the public, I think that changes the dynamic and really opens the door to some amazing things. I think, you know, we've seen the degree of creativity that it's possible for people to exhibit when they're given access to tools, and yeah, I think that's very powerful. So I'm looking forward to it.
I think they're going to blow it wide open.
Yeah, it should be really cool. Well, thank you again. This has been Publishing Talks. It's a podcast about the publishing industry, the future of publishing, and the future of books. I've been talking to Liam Sharp and Ben Abernathy of Madefire. Thanks so much.